And now, talking to the boyhood heroes who became his broadcasting colleagues, this is My Radio 1 with Sean
Tilly. From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1. Sean
Tilly. My Radio 1. My Chris.
Chilly around the ankles. Thank you, Jan. We'll be hearing from some more Jans a bit later in the program because I'm going to be playing quite a few tracks that were in the charts in January's gone by. Some records which should have made it in 1978, a few tips for 79, a couple of competitions to boot, and a lot of good records. Some oldies, some newest, and a few classics. We're going to kick off with this one, wishing you all a funky new year from the Eagles.
Ah, yes. Returning to the iconic building right here where it happened first time around, Mike. Welcome back, in that case, to New Broadcasting House.
Yeah, hi, Sean. Nice to be back here at Radio 1, living the past and talking about it in the future. Brilliant.
But you'd already been on national radio for a year at Radio Luxembourg, but then the call came after, I think it was Doreen Davis, head of programmes at Radio 1, heard you doing a sponsored show on 208, didn't she?
Yeah, I think it was a 7-Up show. And I came over and I thought, oh, they probably see loads of people. Had a chat with Doreen. She said, go next door and see Derek Chinnery. He was the controller. And Derek was like, He's very old-fashioned, Derek. I loved him. He was a suit and tie, and I wasn't, and probably looked a bit hairy. And we had the chat, and then he phoned my agent, and he said, does Mike want this job? My agent said, well, yes. He said he has a rather dilettante approach to it. He said he clearly has independent means, and my agent said, no, I don't think so. He said, well, most people come over here crawling over broken glass and begging for a job. He just seemed to say, well, yeah, call me if you want me. And he said, no, that's how he is. He is passionate about it, but that's his style. And he said, oh, okay. Oh, well, you know, he's in. But he might not want to do just one program a week. So my agent said, look, you're doing 6 programs on Luxembourg. On Radio 1, you're only doing one, so it'd be less money. I said, I'll take it.
Mike Reed coming from Manchester between now and 6:30. Blast furnace and the heat waves are these studio guests. Leo Sayer's going to be popping in as well. We got a 5, 10, 15 years ago spot and also a great old instrumental spot. We're going to kick off this very first program with a classic track from George Thorogood.
So initially, it was Saturday nights. It wasn't straightforward, though. It was in Manchester.
It was in Manchester, and I got up there. Tony Hale produced me, and when I got there, he said, I'm afraid we've got some bad news. And I said, what? He said, the program's not going on. And I said, why? And he said, follow me, come upstairs. And I thought, oh, it's bad news. And there'd been a photograph in the paper, those pastry photographs of you with one of the models and all the rest of it. And I thought, oh, no, it's that. You know, no, they don't like it, whatever. And I was told it was okay, it was good publicity. And I, oh, dear. Anyway, it wasn't that. There was a strike on. So my first programme didn't happen, but it happened the following week.
The top of the day today is in the capable hands of Mike Reed. Can you hear me, Mike?
It is. It's in my capable stomach as well. What a good place to eat. I never thought I'd make it to number 10, but here I am. That's number 10. Not the number 10, but the other number 10.
Can I have a quick word?
And the, the man in charge down here is Giulio Milani. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
I've got that right. You can get your bit right now.
Yeah.
We're on 3 floors of what the first pub of the day to be a wine bar as well.
Wine bar, that's right.
Now, you've got a wine bar downstairs.
Yes.
And this bit is a bar and eating place.
Eating place,
as I know to my cost.
Instantly. And, I mean, literally within weeks, you were introducing Top of the Pops.
That's right. Yeah, it was very, very quick. I think the first programme I actually did was sitting in for Paul Burnett because of the strike. It might have lasted 1 or 2 weeks. And then, yeah, straight into Top of the Pops.
I only wandered in here by accident, but I'm just going to introduce another edition of Top of the Pops. I'm in the phone booth, it's
the one across the hall. How did you find Top of the Pops when you got there?
I thought it was great. One of the things that I remember was Blondie was on and Debbie Harry was wearing that green and white dress. And I thought, oh, Debbie Harry. And I thought, I'm allowed to talk to her. I'm presenting the programme. And Debbie Harry walked over and I thought, oh my God, oh my God, she was so sexy. And as she walked past, I opened my mouth to speak and this sort of squeak came out.
An incredible 35 places to this week's number 29 goes Sylvester and his new single Dance Disco Heat. And here to generate some disco heat of their own are the lovely Legs & Co.
There were some marvellous spin-offs at this time, not least being the commentator on the British Rock and Pop Awards, which were huge at that time.
Yeah, the very first one was it was the Radio 1 Daily Mirror and Nationwide Awards.
Oh, of course, yes.
And Ian Dury won the award, and somebody rather stupidly, because Ian had had polio when he was a lad and couldn't walk very fast, they put him right at the back. So it took him about 15 minutes to get to the front. So I was the covert voice, and I had to talk for about 5 minutes while he made his way to the front. And on that first year as well, Brian Whitehouse, he used to produce Top of the Pops, had got the Top of the Pops dancers on there, I think Legs and Co. or whatever it was. And somebody had very kindly polished the floor to a high gleam, and everybody fell over. They went down like Skittles.
Health and safety in those days.
Oh, yeah. Radio 1 at the time approaching 8 o'clock. It's a very large good evening to Mike Reed.
Oh, and it's an economy-sized good evening to you.
Across the nation, 275 and 285, Radio 1.
Then, in the summer of 1979, you began hosting the Monday to Friday evening programme, handing over to the great John Peel each night.
That's right, and we both did sessions as well. They did live sessions at Maida Vale. I'd sometimes go down and play with a band. They'd say, oh, come down, you know, play a bit of guitar on one of the songs. And it was great, because you'd go and see acts, you'd go and see bands and come in and play them, or say, I love this band to do a session. So even now, there are a lot of bands that say, oh, great, you know, you gave us our first session. It was great. So, yeah, I enjoyed that programme.
John had a question, didn't you?
I did, actually, yes, Mike. I wanted to ask them which of our wavelengths they preferred, whether 275 or 285 was their favourite wavelength.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
I don't know. Perhaps we could write and ask them. They're staying in Cardiff, I believe.
Yeah. They're probably down there at the other end. I mean, I can hear Bates' voice in the distance, but not up close.
Yes, I'd really like to know that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Now, I remember at that time I was going out for lunch one day with Peter Powell and Paul Gambaccini, and Peter was walking next to the curb, Gambo was in the middle, I was on the inside. We're going down to an Italian, and John Peel's coming the other way, and he just looked up and he said, hello Peter, hello Paul, hello Murphy.
Two from the Police, one which should have made it in 1978, Can't Stand Losing You, and the new one, Sir Lonely. We reckon the Police are going to be fairly big in 1979. May the force be with you. Coming up in about 4 minutes' time, we have a competition. Same one as before, same old competition. We're just doing it again, that's all. And I'm going to be playing a theme that was well-known back in the sort of early, mid-60s, and it was the theme to a well-known TV show, which is still going. It has a different theme now. You can win yourself a box set of Elton singles and also a couple of T-shirts, OK? It'll be a written one, so grab your pens, because it's coming up in a second.
It was marvellous, though, because you used to go around all the universities up and down the country, didn't you?
Yeah, I did a lot of different universities did with the Lambrettas. I remember, I think we were in Leeds with the Lambrettas. It was the first time I heard somebody sing my jingle. And we'd done the jingle off the back of my single, High Rise. Staggered me, but the first time I heard it was in Leeds. This bloke across the road is singing my jingle. That's my jingle. And I was so surprised. And he sang the whole lot.
It was only a matter of time before you began fronting the Radio 1 Roadshow. It was a marriage made in heaven, really. Before we talk about that, though, your first one was at South Marine Park in South Shields.
Yes, it was.
Let's have a quick listen to it.
It's time to play the mileage game on the very first Radio 1 Roadshow of 1980. We've got three people leaning over the fence, looking like cows leaning over a gate. Robin Bell from Gateshead, hello. Hello, how are you? All right.
All right, yourself?
Good stuff, I'm well.
You might be in front of the crowd, but you can't forget the people at home. And therefore, if you're doing a stunt or you're doing something on Smiley, it's like a three-act play.
Sheila Thompson from Jarrow. I came through Jarrow yesterday.
Hello,
how are you? All right.
All right, thanks.
How have you got down here?
By bus,
right. And have you had a look at Smiley Miley?
I've seen it before.
Close up?
Not really.
Quite right, too.
You're setting it up so people go, oh, right, they're getting a visual of what you're doing, so are the audience. You play a record, they're poised, and then there's the delivery of like, oh, my goodness me, and everyone's rocking with laughter. You're explaining what's happening, then a record, then the denouement where a sad and bedraggled Smiley Miley is dragged out of the water, covered in frogs and tadpoles and crabs, and saying, oh, you never saw that coming, really. so it's a bit like a three-part play, but you have to explain it for everyone. everybody at home. Otherwise, they're just hearing people laughing and they feel excluded.
Smiley Miley's band has been covered by the Fire Brigade. Oh my goodness me! Oh, what a drastic turn of events! Oh my goodness me, what has happened? You got too close to the Fire Brigade's foam machine and they've tried to put you out as well. You look like a large 14-stone melted ice cream.
I am a melted ice cream. Oh, I feel like a giant cornet in a moment.
You smell... Oh, I'll get you one if you like. You smell like a giant sheep dip. You look as though you've been inside the laundrette machine for 3 hours.
I went to try and move it, and they got me first.
I know, I told them to.
Oh,
I said, when he comes near... That's why I sent you over to do a photograph. I said, when he comes near, just give him the same treatment as the van.
You ever thought about your house being covered in snow?
I love it.
Covered in
snow. Don't you think it looks wonderful?
That was an incredible summer for you, the first one that you did on the road show, the summer of 1980, because no sooner were you doing that first week that you depped on the breakfast show for the rest of the summer. Did you have any inkling at all that you were, in fact, auditioning for it?
I think there were two people in the frame, it seemed. It was Andy Peebles and myself were sort of in the frame for it. Radio 1,
Breakfast Show. 8:32, it's Mike Reed on the wireless, and it's Monday, and it's sunny, which is the best bit of all. Good morning. It's me till 9 o'clock, and then it's Simon at 9 o'clock with a golden hour till 10, and him till 11.
I didn't really think any more about it until, I think it was October, November of 1980, and I just done my programme, and I got a call saying DLT was doing the breakfast show a week away in Birmingham. Dave is really rough. He's got flu, and he can't do the programme. Could you drive up after your programme? This is the hotel, and do the next 3 days, the rest of the week, 3 or 4 days, whatever it was. And I said, yeah, OK. So I said to Peely, I said, I've got to go up and do the breakfast show. Dave's not well. He said, oh, good pal, you know, great. Anyway, I drove off. I only got as far as St John's Wood because there was some unlit roadworks where someone had taken the lights away, and I drove into this massive hole in the road, clunk, wrecked all four tyres. All right, phoned the AA, got that sorted, phoned Peely, and I said, I'm coming back, and told him what had happened. He said, right, come back. He said, when I finish the programme, I'll drive you up there.
Wow.
So John drove me up to the hotel. We got there. Nobody else was up, apart from Roy Wood having a drink. So the three of us sat up and had a drink for an hour. And I had about 2 hours sleep, then did the breakfast show.
Police, do-do-do-da-da-da. Always before you start a new programme, the night before when you try to sleep and you can't, you have these dreadful dreams where you come on and say, good afternoon, you're on 272 and 279 and things like that, and forget to give time checks. All these dreadful things. They're not really dreams, they're all those half dreams, you know, where you're not quite asleep. Anyway, it's 7:09, and school desk, as per norm, at about 7:45. If you've got a good reason why your school ought to be included, jot it down on a postcard and whack it off to me at the usual address.
And then, within a few weeks, January 81, I was doing it.
Monday the 5th of January 1981.
As the first morning, you're terrified. I remember sitting in the seat here in Broadcasting House and thinking that I was a fraud. And I thought, oh no, this seat belongs to Dave. It belongs to Noel Edmonds. It belongs to Tony Blackburn. I thought, I'm a new boy. I feel like a new boy in school here, you know. But you soon get used to it. You know, you come up with lots of ideas, and initially you pack yourself with ideas to make yourself feel comfortable. Oh, let's have this and let's do this. And after a while, you think, yeah, I don't need to, you know. And you let them all go and just do your program.
Radio 1, Mike Reed, Monday morning, breakfast show.
John Sparrow was your first breakfast show producer.
Yes.
Was that a good working relationship?
Yeah, I had a lot of good working relationships. John, I worked with on it. Dave Tate, I worked with on it. Paul Williams, I worked with on it. They were all great. Yeah, I got on with all my producers. They're all different, as DJs are different. You know, they have different ideas, different way of doing things, you know, different way of chatting to you, different way of doing the program or handling the program or how much they left to you. They were all good, and you learn from all these people because they've been here for a while. Mm. So even though you were the sort of new kid on the block, maybe a bit Jack the Lad, you still learn from them. And they said, no, look, just a word of advice, don't do that, or just play this straight, or don't talk too much or whatever. So yeah, you did learn stuff as well.
Mike Reed
on your radio today.
Remember remember for quite a while you were working at either end of each Friday because you, at this time, or very soon afterwards, became the new host of Round Table.
That's right, yeah. And John Walters was the producer for Round Table. I remember Pamela Stevenson was on with myself and Brian Setzer from the Stray Cats once, and she got onto the table and undid our trousers. We struggled like hell. Stop, stop, Pamela, we said. And John Walters, he said, it's the only time the ratings have turned around and gone up again because she removed our trousers and dropped our trousers under the table. It was hilarious.
Do you still actually get around the London clubs to sort of boogie the night away at all?
Not really. No, I've got a disco in my own house, mate.
I mean, what do you do? Boogie by yourself?
Yeah, no, I have friends down, you know.
Good, that's enough of that. Right, on to the next record. Radio 1 Roundtable. It's Roundtable. Paul Burnett, Elton John, et moi. This is the new single from somebody who Elton's written with before, Tom Robinson, his band Sector 27.
Malcolm McLaren was on. I remember
what, oh, I remember listening to
and
that.
And he wouldn't stop talking. And in the end, I thought, what can I do to just stop him seamlessly talking? And eventually, I just picked up the microphone and held it above my head so his voice was nowhere near it. I couldn't think of anything else to do. I remember Andy Summers being on once, and he sniffed all the way through it. And I said, why don't you blow your nose? He took it really offensively. He was terribly offended and nearly walked out, I think. But it was a fairly reasonable request.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Reed and Steve Wright's Christmas show.
You must have been thrilled when your old local radio pal Steve Wright joined the network from Luxembourg. Because yeah, you're occasionally hosting the Reed and Wright show together on Radio 1.
Yeah, it was interesting. We started together. I mean, I got the gig at Radio Luxembourg, and then Steve got the next thing at Radio Luxembourg, and then I got to Radio 1, and then he came to Radio 1, which is fantastic. I was really pleased because we worked well together on the radio, and when I got to Luxembourg, I thought, oh, you know, Steve shouldn't be there, he should be here. And then the same with Radio 1. And because of the names, you know, obviously Reed and Wright, wonderful. So I did a jingle for us that went,
Reed and Wright, Reed and Wright, Read and write, read and write, read and write.
It took Steve a year to work out that I got four mentions to his two. He said, wait a minute, read and write. It took him 12 months to work that one out. Slow, mate, you were slow. But we didn't see each other off air, but on air, we just worked. We knew what the other one was going to say, we knew what they were going to do, and it was one of those sort of marriages made in heaven. We just worked together, and if someone had got the punchline, the other one wouldn't try and top him. You go, yeah, take it. You know, if you got the last hit line, no one is, oh, I better think of a better line than that. We didn't waste time talking about nonsense. We hit the nonsense straight away and hit it hard. There was no fluffy stuff. And it was great, and we made up characters, and Steve carried on doing characters. We had Green Fingers Hothouse, the local gardener, you know, and Steve would interview me. I said, yeah, I got a load of manure. And Steve said, what's the other name for it? Oh, no, dung. No, he said, there's another name for it, that, you know, trying to make you say shh, you know. And then we had a pop singer who always mimed in the studio, and a footballer, Mickey Stryker. He said, how many times you scored this week, Mickey? He said, oh, scored four times this week. He said, so you won the match? I said, no, before the match. I scored four times before the match in the club.
What you got next?
Well, I got next.
Yeah.
You don't know what I got next. I've been working, actually, on a 12 Days of Christmas top 12.
A top 12?
12 Days of Christmas. Haven't got very far yet. A funny one. Trouble is, I can't think of anything funny.
Then you captained a boat called the River Jester on a journey from Hampton Court to Oxford with your crew made up of Noel Edmonds and Paul Gambaccini. Captain and, Mike. Yeah. Captain Reed.
And Noel's dog.
Oh, right.
Noel's dog was meant to be, you know, the dog from Three Men in the Boat, but he decamped after one day. He'd had enough. He jumped off and ran off. I came up with the idea when Dorian Davis said, have you got any ideas? I said, why do we need Three Men in the Boat? And we started off in the maze at Hampton Court, and it was terrific fun.
And I must honestly say that this week the standard of rivermanship has been exceedingly high.
I think it's been absolutely marvelous. I think Noel has navigated fairly well. He's known when to go west, when to go north. I think I've cooked fairly well, and Captain, you've done so well. I must admit, I'm quite sad that it's all over now, and also I'm wondering whether we should go ahead with this program, because no one is going to believe what we're going to tell them in the next 2 hours about
yeah,
what...
Yeah, I was the captain. Noel was in the galley. He was the cook, and Paul Gambaccini steered the boat. And we got people at every lock, and I thought, God, there's so many, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Something's going to fall in. Anyway, we got encouraged by another boat that was throwing eggs at us, and we threw some eggs back or something like that. There was something silly going on. And then we had a boat pull alongside saying, you've been ordered off the river for misbehaving. What? You know, this serious guy in uniform. Oh, blood, oh God, the bee are going to be absolutely livid. And we thought, oh, this is ghastly. And we pulled into the next lock, and they said, sorry, we've got to take you off. And you go, oh, no. It was a smiley, miley.
Yay!
Oh, my goodness. Great fun. I mean, it was just one of those mad things. You had the front cover of the Radio Times, the three of us in boaters and blazers on a nice, you know, summery day. It wasn't quite like that when we got out there because it was cold and there was ice on the inside of the windows and stuff like that. But it just fueled people's imaginations. And people, I still now get people saying, oh, well, we came down to your Three Men in a Boat, you know, and it was all that time ago. But people remember.
Three Men in a Boat, moored up at Oxford. Good morning to you and good morning to the chap in the galley.
Morning. Right, OK, you finally cajoled me into coming into the galley. Do you realise this is the last morning I'm going to have to do this?
You'll miss it, won't you?
Cool, yes, like a house on thingy.
Tomorrow morning you'll be in your kitchen at home. You'll be cooking mounds of mushrooms and eggs and bacon.
I've just been discussing with one of our technical gentlemen here that my kitchen at home is going to seem like Earl's Court compared with doing it in here.
That must be painful.
Oh, dear me.
I heard you just now saying, right, if they want breakfast, they're going to get breakfast. I'm going to go over the top. There's going to be mounds of it.
Yes. Yes, you're going to have to eat more breakfast than you've ever eaten before.
Mm.
Hey, when you were doing a rundown of our little problem with the boat, you didn't mention that by the time the engineers arrived, I'd completely dismantled the steering system and dashboard using only a corkscrew and one knife.
On the breakfast show, this was when we started here your musical prowess as well. Now, everybody jokes, don't they, Mike, about taking the guitar in the studio.
Yeah.
How did it all begin?
I don't know how it started, but it was one of those jokey things that I was talking about Burt Wheedon's Play in a Day, that everybody, all the guitarists, you'd get Burt Wheedon's Play in a Day. Of course, you couldn't play in a day, but you could sort of. And I thought it'd be quite a good wheeze to start to learn. But I already played. So that's what I did. And I was sort of plonking away. And people think, oh, that's terrible. But you weren't actually playing properly. And with Bert, you know, I get to page 10 and go, oh, Bert, hang on. Now I see a picture of the strap. You didn't tell me about the strap. I've broken 10 guitars. They all dropped on the floor. And I get to page 20 and I go, I know what it is. It's the cufflinks. I've just seen your cufflinks, but I should be wearing cufflinks. Stuff like that. And then Bert said to me one day, he said, you know, it's given me a new life. He's doing all the holiday camps.
He said,
one girl came up to me last week, this little girl, and she looked up and she said, are you really Bert Wheedon? He said, yes. She said, oh, everyone at school thought Mike Reed had made you up.
I love it. Like some sort of breakfast show character.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah. Because of the name, I guess, Bert Wheedon. Sounded a funny name to kids.
Your name is Reedy and I truly love you so, because you read my letter on the radio. You really made my day, I just want you to know. Oh Reedy, Reedy, now I'll listen to your show.
And if you weren't busy enough by this stage on Radio 1, you began introducing Pop Quiz on a Saturday night. That was first. I mean, that must have been such a thrill, hanging out with all those famous pop stars every week.
When you look at it now, I didn't think about it at the time. When you look at it now, there are people on a panel game that you wouldn't get on a panel game. Members of Led Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones, Queen. I mean, you didn't get people like that on a panel game. George Michael, Morrissey, you know, on a panel game. Come on, Meatloaf, Cliff. I mean, it was a real mixture.
And tonight's victors, they are Cliff Steen from Bucks Fizz, Cheryl Baker. Stuart Adamson from Good Country. And the winning skipper, Cliff Richards.
And the thing was, you could see people in a totally different situation. You'd see them in an interview situation, you'd see them performing, but you never saw them just sitting there interacting. You know, Cliff with Rick Parfitt, you know, and these different people, you know, Robin Gibb with Dave D, a real mixture. You know, I mean, and you know, George Michael, Midge Ure, they're all mixed into, you didn't see them together. So I think that was that was fun, and that made it different. I mean, and it did pull in 10 million every Saturday night at 6:30.
So. Astonishing figures now, looking back, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But and it was great fun, only half an hour long, but it worked. We tramped through it. And, of course, with a quiz, you can't edit because the score is the score. You can't edit something because the score wouldn't work.
And following on from Noel, having secured the Radio 1 Breakfast Show, which you'd have been doing for, I guess, about 18 months now, autumn of 1982, Saturday morning TV comes along in the shape of Saturday Superstore.
Hello, I'm Mike Reed. It's 9:30 on Saturday morning and time for me to open the Saturday Superstore.
The same thing happened as at Radio 1. Chris Bellinger, the editor, came down and chased me across the Horseshoe car park at Old TV Centre, and he said, if we were to offer you this job, would you take it? And I said, yeah, okay, because after you'd gone, we all said, does he really want this job? You know, because everyone else is like desperate,
isn't it? Yeah.
So I said, oh yeah.
Welcome to George, and also to John and Roy, who'd come in to see us. Thanks for coming along. Sorry to make you get ready so early in the morning.
That's okay. My eyes are watering.
Right. It's not that early. We're going to get straight into the prize picks from last week's cards, because we've got millions of them over there. Do you fancy being bin men? Have you ever emptied dustbins or anything like that?
Yes. All the time.
Oh, really?
This is your big chance to reenact part of your former life. Let's go over and do them. I'll beat you at Conkers later.
It was wonderful because it was the longest live show in the world. It was 3.25 hours long. And you didn't know it was going to turn up. One morning you get like Spandau, the Police and Culture Club all coming on, or Mike Gatting, the England cricket captain, you know, I mean, anybody, Margaret Thatcher, you know, all the party leaders, Neil Kinnock, David Steele, you know, astronauts. I mean, it's just...
The Doctor Who's?
Yeah,
they used to
all
be on,
the Doctor
they?
Who's.
Yeah.
There. We had three Doctor Who's on at once, I think. And it was a sort of antechamber for anything like the new Hello, Hello series. We'd have Gordon Kaye on, you know, so whatever new Grange Hill, you know, whatever was coming up, we'd have them on to promote the new series. So it worked terribly well. And you'd have a little bit of fun between yourselves as well. You know, there'd be Keith going, hey, everybody, how are you feeling? Great. And he'd be so up and so charged, Keith. It was hilarious.
In the meantime, we go back upstairs and here's Myrtle.
Thanks very much, Keith. Dingy shirt, Crystal Palace. I was like Keith on the delivery van in South London. We have some calls to Richard Branson about his blue ribbon attempt a bit later, 01811 8055. You want to chat to Richard about that, or indeed about his records company?
Isn't he the fellow with the airline?
Yeah. Or you can chat to him about his airline as well.
Oh, I fly on that. Yeah.
Hayley Knott and Sammy Rudd said, dear Superstore, we were shocked to hear somebody say that crow was smelly.
What?
So we've sent him some crow fume here.
I'll leave it out.
Yeah, here's the crow fume.
Let's smell it.
Look, have a smell of that.
Oh, it's terrible, lad.
And then, of course, Judd Lander did crow.
Yes, dear old Judd.
He's underneath. Oh, just doing this Liverpudlian crow. Yeah, right there. You know,
that was just his excuse to get into TV Centre every week so he could be plugging Top of the Pops.
I think so. He used to plug me under the desk.
I bet he did, don't forget
so-and-so. So you get Crow the Puppet to plug you. Don't forget that great band so-and-so. Yeah, all right. And then, so I'd have the remains of my tea and I said, I'll pour this away. And he's going, no. And you're going to pour the tea over him so it starts pulling the hairs out of my legs. So all the stuff going on you can't see. You know.
You fronted Superstore until 1987 and you stay with Radio 1 until 1991, including just over 5 years on The Breakfast Show, being replaced in May 1986 by Mike Smith.
Hello.
Oh, you are there.
I was just listening to you talking.
No, I was waiting for you to sort of, you know, whistle in like you normally do.
Well, I would do, but somebody's been into my cupboard and stolen my headphones.
I thought you were going to say someone had stolen your whistle. Someone's stolen your headphones.
You understand what it's like, don't you? I mean, it's almost like a part of you, isn't it? You know, you get so used to them.
Well, I mean, I wear mine all day long.
Someone's been into my cupboard and had them away.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a really rotten trick,
that is. It is a rotten trick, that. It's like stealing somebody's underpants.
Who would have done something like that? Now, let's have a good think about this, Mr. Reed.
I don't know, but no one will own up. What will happen is they'll just appear. They'll reappear in about 2 days' time when I've gone out and lashed out on a new pair.
So you're doing this morning without headphones, then?
Well, I've got a funny little pair, you know, a little antique pair with cobwebs on.
Oh, they're so cute.
I hate them.
Funny little antique pair with cobwebs on, huh?
Yes, it sounds like us.
And how are the headphones?
13 years she stayed with the network, all told, Mike. And as always, it's lovely to see you, and thank you very much for sharing your Radio 1.
Pleasure.